while Ardsdale Baptist Church brings you the Word of God with practicality and simplicity. As you listen to this message, we trust that it will equip and empower you to find and fulfill your purpose.
It's not over. You haven't got the message so far this morning, then that's the message. It's not over. It's not over. And I want you to consider your own circumstances, because sometimes life beats you up. Sometimes your health is a struggle. Sometimes your circumstances, sometimes your monetary situation is a struggle. Can I pay the mortgage? Can I pay the rent? Can I get myself through to the next month? Sometimes family. Sometimes it's a blessing, sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes it's hard to see that God is working in your life. You've committed your life to God, but it's hard to see that God is working in your life. Is God still working in my life is a question. Hebrews 12, 1 to 3, recognizes that. In verse 3, it actually says, remember these things so that you won't grow weary and lose heart. It recognizes that that's going to be a feature of where we are sometimes. Let's look at this book of Hebrews. So its author is unknown. It's been topped and tailed as a letter. Usually in the letters, you'll see the person introducing themselves that's writing the letter and then signing off the letter. But the letters have the top taken off it and the bottom, and we don't know who the author of the Hebrews was, apart from, of course, God himself. But if we look at the sequence of the books in the New Testament, there is a sequence, the way that they've been laid out. There are the histories. So you've got the four Gospels, the life's four accounts of the life of Jesus. Then you've got the book of Acts, history of the early church in the first 30 to 40 years of its life. So after the book of Acts, you've got Paul's letters. Then you've got the book of Hebrews. And that's a suggestion, I think, that people thought that this book was written by Paul. I personally do think it's written by Paul, but we don't know the author. Then you've got James' letters, then you've got Peter's letters, John's letters, Jude's letter, and then the book of Revelation make up the New Testament of our Bibles. When we're doing Barbara gets us doing Bible drill next time. If you understand the sequence of the books in the Bible, it kind of helps you to find the books in the Bible as well. And there are two books in the New Testament that really go into depth about what is Christianity. Christianity explained. Some account for history, some account for particular pastoral issues. Some accounts are to kind of leaders of the church. Of course, there's the book of the Revelation, the prophecy of things to come in future times. But there are two books in the New Testament that really take Christianity and try to explain it to a reader. One of them is the book of Romans. So if you're a new Christian, if you're an experienced Christian, I would encourage you to read the whole book of Romans. Sometimes when we come to a message like today, we just take a part of it because there's so much in it that that's all we can do. Sometimes when we're doing our Bible studies on a daily basis, they will just take a Bible text because obviously that's a manageable chunk. But read the book of Romans. Pastor's favourite verse, Romans 8:28. My favourite verse, Romans 1 verse 20. I know Elder Alan loves Romans 12. And that's a great explanation of Christianity, what it stands for, what it's about to a non-Christian reader. And then we've got the book of Hebrews. That's also an explanation of Christianity, but it explains it to it from a Jewish point of view. As its name suggests, it was written to the Hebrews. It was written to a Jewish audience. And therefore, there's a huge amount of allusions To the Old Testament. There are in the other books as well. So all the books reference the Old Testament. But if you read the book of Hebrews, it's continually kind of putting it back to the Old Testament. How does the New Testament fit with the Old Testament? So it's explaining Christianity to a Jewish audience. This is the perspective. And it's very useful to study this from our point of view. So for example, the Day of Atonement, the great Jewish festival, Yom Kippur, celebrated once every year by the Jews. How does that fit with Christianity? Well, in Hebrews 9 and verse 10, Louise has already guided us into Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 9 and Hebrews chapter 10 says, we don't need the Day of Atonement anymore because we've had a great Day of Atonement in the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And Christ, once for all, has made atonement for us, for our God, once for all. And so, in the Christian mind, we remember the Lord's death at communion. That's our interpretation of the one Day of Atonement. The Day of Atonement that was happening every single year was just a foreshadowing of what was to come, of actually what was God had planned for Jesus. And so in the book of Hebrews, it explains it, how Christianity, the New Testament, links with the Old Testament. What is still in place, what is not in place, because it's been superseded by the New Testament. And we come to this chapter 12, and it starts with a word, therefore. So as we know, if we've been writing our essays and things like that, if there's ever a word therefore, it means that there's something that's come before. There's an argument that's come before. There's a whole set of statements that have come before, so that we get to the point of therefore. As a consequence of what I've said here, therefore, this applies. That's true. And sometimes, as mature Christians, we need to use the word therefore. Not everything is prescribed to us in the Christian life. Where do we stand on this topic of assisted dying? Okay, is a relevant kind of recent topic. We're not necessarily directly told in the Bible, but if we read the Bible in its entirety, not just a select verses to prove our own point, but we understand the Bible in its entirety, we can then say, therefore, we would conclude that this is the right way to act. And this is a challenge for us in the Christian life. So therefore, what came before Hebrews 12? Well, Hebrews 11, of course. Okay, no surprises there. And many of you will know this very famous passage is by faith. And the writer of Hebrews defines faith. Faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. What a great statement of faith. And then he goes on to say, by faith, Abel, by faith, Enoch, by faith, Noah, by faith, Abraham, by faith, Moses, by faith, Isaac, by faith, Jacob, Joseph, and by faith, Rahab. And he details all the things they did by faith. And then he says, and what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell you about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets, who through their faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised. And so he used the word surrounded. And I'm just going to say to you, we are surrounded. We have Abraham, we have Isaac, we have Noah, we have Enoch, we have Rahab, we have Esther, we have a great cloud of witnesses. More so than that, you actually have people that you know. Maybe a grandparent, maybe a parent that was such a witness to you. We're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, who are a testimony to their faith. These people, through faith, acted in a certain way, and therefore we get to chapter 12, the writer says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders us and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of God. Consider him who enjoyed such opposition from sinful men, so that you not grow weary and lose heart." As Lillian has pointed out to us, let's consider Jesus, all the shame that he suffered. Crucifixion was brutal. It was designed to be brutal. It was designed to be a deterrent. And the Romans borrowed an execution technique which was the most horrendous that they could find. They got it from another civilization, and they used it. And the first part was flogging. This is actually just taking the skin off someone's back and having them kind of flogged. And the reason that was part of the execution process is when you're crucified and you're having to, your arms are outstretched, you're struggling to breathe after a period of time, and you have to push yourself up. You have to push yourself up on the nailed feet that you have. And it was designed, again, to hit nerve centres. Those nails were designed to hit nerve centres. And you have to push yourself up on a rough cross with a back that's been absolutely kind of flogged. It was designed to be a long death. Quite often it would take a day. In our Lord's case, it was a few hours, but it was designed to be a long death. It was designed to be a shameful death. Unlike the loincloths that are always on pictures, most crucified victims were completely naked, and it was designed to be for maximum pain. And consider what Jesus was able to do, was prepared to do for you. And he did it because of the reward that was coming. So, consider him who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of God. He knew that he was going to save millions of people through his actions. He knew that he was going to sit down at the right hand of God. And he bore that shame as well. Consider Jesus. Do you think it was hard? The people that are surrounding us, these witnesses, what would they say to us? Do you think our lives were easy? They would say to us. Do you think sometimes we didn't lose heart? Consider this as we consider this thing. It's not over. Okay, a few weeks ago I was able to go to Central America. I was able to go through kind of Mexico, Belize, Guatemala, Honduras, and into El Salvador. When I was in Guatemala, I was able to visit part of a jungle there, and there's a fantastic Mayan city, kind of ruined Mayan city, that was in place about 1,200 years ago. And I wonder if I could have the first picture up, please. Okay. So in the jungle in Guatemala, there's this Mayan city called Tikal. It's been uninhabited since about AD 900, but there's still huge kind of temples coming out of the jungle. So just focus on the temple at the back and not on that handsome guy in the foreground. But these ruins are really, really kind of impressive. The most impressive Mayan city that I've seen, and I've had the privilege of seeing a number of these. Could we have the next picture, please? If you look at it from... Okay. Okay. So what that is a picture of. That is a viewpoint from one of the temples. And all the site that you can see in front of you would have been cleared. It would have had houses, farms, shops, canals, temples, markets, all the stuff of a big city. There was many, many tens of thousands of people that lived in this city. Now you can just see maybe the tops of the highest temples that are still remaining. And I suppose the question is, thank you. That's what it should look like. Have our lives become like that? Have our Christian lives become that? Originally, it was kind of demarked. We knew where we were with kind of Christians, but the jungles kind of crept in. It's hard almost to distinguish ourselves from our other Christian activities, and maybe just a few things in our Christian life stand out. Is that where we are? Is that where we've got to? We've grown weary and we've lost heart, and it feels like God's not worked in my life for a while. Well, the message this morning is it's not over. Hebrews 12 says to us, let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us by Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Jesus was there at the beginning of the faith that we had. Jesus is there at the end of the faith that we will have. And Jesus is with us all the way along the way. Now, there's a place called Morecambe Bay. This is in Cumbria. It's actually a very beautiful part of North England. And Morecambe Bay is a very, very kind of large kind of sand flat. They are beautiful and they are deadly. So they have shifting sands that move continuously. They have quicksands. They have tides that kind of rush in faster than you can kind of run to the shore because the flat is so level. Some of you might remember some 20 years ago something called the cockle pickers disaster. This happened at Morecambe Bay. People that were trying to, they weren't kind of regular citizens. They were being abused. They were being abused to work to pick cockles in Morecambe Bay, and the tide came in far too fast for them to recover, and they were washed out to sea. And 23 of them were drowned. So Morecambe Bay is a beautiful place, and it's a very deadly place. You need a professional guide to get your way across Morecambe Bay. So if you're guide, if you're with a guide at Morecambe Bay and you get halfway across and the guide looks at his watch, says, actually it's my lunch break now. I'm just off. I'll see you in an hour, hopefully. Watch out for the shift in sands and try not to tread in the kind of a quicksands. I think you'll be all right with the tide. I'm not entirely sure. So if your guide said that, then they're not much good. If you think that Jesus has stopped guiding your way, you're saying that Jesus has gone on his lunch break. And that isn't the case. And I want to encourage you here this morning to say, God is with us. Jesus is with us all the way. This text says, let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. That doesn't finish halfway through the journey. We have a race that's marked out for us. And sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's really difficult. We've just got to get through it. Winston Churchill once observed, when you're going through hell, you just need to keep going. And sometimes it's really hard, but that doesn't mean that it's over and God has forgotten about you, or God has, are somehow kind of distracted in some other way. The way is marked out for us. Well, what about those that are near to the end of their lives? So my mother is 97. Someone else. She was 97 in June. All I can say is 1927 was clearly an extremely good year, Auntie Joan, to be born. What about her? Is it over? Well, I'm prayed for every day by my mother. She dedicates 30 minutes, at least 30 minutes of a day, to prayers, thanking God for his goodness to her, bringing the people of the church, bringing her family before God. She's prayed for me this morning. I know she would have done. And I'm prayed for every day as a consequence of my mother. My father died in January last year. The last months were really quite difficult. He lost some of his bodily kind of functions, and my mum, at 95 as she was then, was determined to look after him on her own. We said, "You need help, Mum. You need help." And my mum said, "I'm looking after him. I'm looking after him." I know that was partly to protect his dignity. I know that was partly partly out of her love for him. And she was determined to look after my father. Now, we got to about 2 years ago, and my father, we put him, he went into a home for a few days. My mother had just had some respite care. We went away with my mum, and she was absolutely exhausted. And we said to her, you've got to have professional help now, Mum, with Dad. It's just too much for you. You're 95 years of age. And she said for the first time, yes, I do need help. I actually do need help. And so we got help for him. And in the last 3 months of his life, we had a full-time carer to help my mum. Very heavily supervised by my mother. I might add. And I said to her, that was really difficult. That was a really difficult time. And she said to me, I've had a long life. And the Lord has been incredibly good to me, as she said. And he's brought me through a number of troubles. And it's been fairly trouble-free in my life when I look at it as a whole. And so I'm completely blessed by what the Lord has done for me. And Paul says, if you remember, I've known hardship, and I've learned to be content in any circumstance. And I read it on a page, and I understand what Paul's saying, but with my mother's testimony, she has learned to be content in any circumstance, through the hard times as well as the good times, because she can look back and see how good the Lord has been to her. Before I went on my holiday, I said to my mum, "Look, I'm away for 3 weeks. Please don't die. That's going to be really inconvenient for me, because it's all about me, of course." She replied, "I will do my best. But when the master calls me," she didn't finish that sentence because I knew what she was going to say. "When the master calls me, I am completely ready." And she's got to that point in her life where it's not I'm not talking about anything kind of suicidal. There's nothing like that. She knows the Lord will be with her. She will go to be with the Lord soon. And she's reached that point in her life where she says, "I am completely ready for the next stage." Some call it death. Some call it the appointment. Okay? The appointment that none of us quite know when is coming, but we need to be ready for. So she prays every day, she is content, and she is ready for her appointment. And what I would say to you, even if you're towards the end of your Christian journey, what an example you can give to the people around you. I know many people in here. I know Joyce actually. His mum was 100 years old, lived to be 100 years old, and what a testimony she was, you know. And other stories as well can say, look at these people, look at the example that they have. So even if you're 97, then it's not over. Okay. We've come to that point. So what? The so what part of the sermon. Or indeed, if we're using the correct argument, the therefore part of the sermon. We've done some of the background. What does that actually mean? Well, there's three things. There's three things that we need to do. The writer of Hebrews says, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. Has there bits of the jungle that you've got to kind of clear from your life? If we're running a race, and that's the analogy that's been given here, if we're running a race, we don't want to load on our back. We need to get rid of some stuff. There's some stuff that I've been kind of working on for me personally. I'm great at holding a grudge. I don't know if that's a feature of yours, but I can hold a grudge until kingdom come. Okay, and this is a part of my personality which I'm not proud of. It's not certainly not one of the fruits of the Spirit. And as a Christian in my journey, then obviously the fruits of the Spirit should be what I aspire to. And I've been working on trying to be more forgiving to people, trying to let things go from the past, trying to realise that people do make mistakes, and maybe that was a feature of them at the time. But is there something that you know is not a fruit of the Spirit? It's just weighing you down, actually. Because actually holding a grudge is weighing me down. It's not really affecting the person that I'm holding a grudge against, even. It's just kind of bogging me down. And it's stopping me from running the race. It's a load on my back. But is there something in your life? Are there some things in your life that you say, I've got to put those down. I've got to get rid of that hindrance. I've got to take that load off my back so that I can run the race that's been marked out for me. If that's the thing, then the message this morning is to encourage you to work on those things and just to get rid of all that sin that entangles your race. Second thing is to run with perseverance. And this is very relevant for this bit. We need to continue with our own kind of a perseverance. It's a marathon, the Christian life. And it's a Christian life that my mother's been travelling for 70 years. 70 plus years. And we need to run with perseverance. Sometimes in a marathon, you hit something called a wall. It's a mental barrier. Perhaps you've hit that mental barrier and you need to work your way through that barrier. Continue and persevere in the race. Again, kind of on my holidays, I was in Honduras, and again a lot of jungle, more Mayan ruins there as well. But there was these beautiful thermal hot springs that they were promised. They were 7 miles away from where our hotel was, they allowed an hour and a half to actually get to these hot springs. And these were just like a regular country roads. And I'm like, I can understand if I'm trying to get through across London, it does take me an hour and a half to do kind of 7 miles. But I'm just on country road. Why on earth does it take, they allowed an hour and a half to travel to these hot springs? Well, Honduras does not have a lot of infrastructure. And if I say this was a road with potholes, that wouldn't be true. This was a series of potholes with a little bit of road, kind of, you know, connecting the dots. And the journey was kind of like this for actually, it was 2 hours. I thought to myself, I paid for this. What have I done? Why have I even started this journey? Why have I even started it? Andy, it's not over. That's what I needed to tell myself. Partway on this kind of road, there's just a herd of cows. Nobody's in charge of these cows. These cows aren't interested in kind of moving out the way for the inconvenience of a vehicle coming by. So we have to get out the car. We have to get out the van that we're in. And we start having to shoo these cows to the side just so that we can get the... What have I done? I've paid for this. What have I done? And we get to another part of the road. There's been a heavy vehicle gone down it. The road is so bad that we can't actually... The ruts are so deep, we can't actually even get across them. We actually get out and have to remake the road, start pushing the rocks kind of into the holes in order to get... Do you want to know why it takes, you know, kind of 7 miles takes kind of an hour? In fact, it took 2 hours. It took 2 hours for us to get to where we were. Okay. Andy, it's not over. We got to the thermal springs, and could I have the next picture up, please? So I don't know if you can see that. It actually says 190 degrees Fahrenheit or 90 degrees centigrade, so nearly boiling water coming out of this volcanic rock. They then actually channeled it into these pools, different temperatures, so they mixed it with water at different levels. One was like the hottest pool was like 45 degrees, one was 38, one was 30 degrees, and then there was a cold pool as well. And the next picture, please. So that's us. I'm actually in the cool pond, but you kind of went between the hot and the cold. The cold wasn't actually that cold. It was kind of their cold, which is kind of their room temperature. We're still quite hot, but if you come from 45 degrees, it does shock your system a bit. And that's the point. And we were in these different pools for two hours. And it was just incredible. I've never felt so relaxed. Oh, I've not felt so relaxed for years. My body was like, oh, just anything, just bring it on. That journey home was just dead easy. You know, I slept that night. I haven't slept as well for years. I'm not kidding. And I woke up and my body, I could still feel my muscles kind of absolutely soothed when I was kind of woken up. I thought, oh, life is just so great. It's fantastic to be alive. It really is. But I needed to keep going. I needed to remind myself that the journey's not over and the prize is there. To fix our eyes on Jesus. One of my favourite passages was actually one of the passages that Louise read earlier from Revelation 21. So let's fix our eyes on Jesus, who started and will finish with us. And those other distractions just put aside, because we know we have a new heaven and a new earth, and there'll be no more tears and no more crying in that place. And we've got a huge place to look onto. We've been given the gift. We've been given an absolute gift of the Christian life. It's not always easy, but we've got a goal that is beyond us and can see us through it. We've got a guide that is walking beside us all the time as well. And I just wanted to say the message this morning is it's not over. You might be in a difficult period, but the Lord will bring you through it to a much greater place and to a final destination where we will be with him forever. Amen.
We trust that you've been blessed and believe that this message has brought you greater understanding. For more information or to follow up on what you've heard in this message, visit us on www.phbc.org.uk. God bless you.